Here Lies the Heart, Part 2. With this article, we conclude Mercedes de Acosta's account of her experiences with the Maharishi, as related in her autobiography, Here Lies the Heart, which was published in the USA in 1960. The questions she sent Guy Haig to ask Maharishi and the Maharishi's replies are also included. It must be noted that these are different from other questions Haig put to the Maharishi on De Acosta's behalf and are recorded in Talks with Sri Ramana Maharishi under the date 15th of December 1938. Before leaving the ashram, I wrote down several questions for Guy Haig to ask Bhagwan that I had not had a chance to ask myself. I had been bothered by the fact that so many saints and enlightened people had been ill and suffering physically. I asked, should they not have perfect bodies and why do they not cure themselves? In Europe, I got a letter from Guy saying he had discussed my question with Bhagwan. He wrote, Bhagwan told me to tell you that the spiritually perfect person need not necessarily have a perfect body. The reason, as he explained it, is very simple. You see, the ego, the body, and the mind are the same thing. The spiritually perfect person, like Bhagwan, is about these three things. Consequently, he has no body to heal, neither a mind or ego to heal it with. He is beyond all this because it is illusion. He is living in reality. Christian scientists can take the mind and heal the body, for they are the same thing. American Indians heal too in this manner. It is faith healing. But if the spiritually perfect person is sick in body, it is because the body is working out its karma. Bhagavan gave an illustration of karma, which he says is like an electric fan and must just run its course, only gradually ceasing even after it has been turned off. He says the mind is born into illusion and builds a body and a world to suit it. That is, a world that it has earned and deserves by its karma. Bhagavan, knowing the body and the mind to be illusion, cannot experience any bodily ailment or discomfort. We make him suffer pain, loss of weight, etc. It is in our minds, not his. He is actually bodiless, though you and I cannot realize this as a fact. In another letter, Guy answered my questions, which led to others. He wrote down my questions and Bhagavan's answers. Question: is reincarnation a fact? Bhagavan, you are incarnated now, aren't you? Then you will be so again. But as the body is illusion, then the illusion will repeat itself and keep on repeating itself until you find the real self. Question: what is death and what is birth? Bhagavan, only the body has death and birth, and it, the body, is illusion. There is, in reality, neither birth nor death. Question: how much time may elapse between death and rebirth? Bhagavan, perhaps one is reborn within a year, 3 years, or thousands of years. Who can say? Anyway, what is time? Time does not exist. Question: why have we no memory of past lives? Bhagavan, memory is a faculty of the mind and part of the illusion. Why do you want to remember other lives that are also illusions? If you abide within the self, there is no past or future, and not even a present, since the self is out of time, timeless. Question: are the world, the mind, ego, and the body all the same thing? Bhagavan: yes, they are one and the same thing. The mind and the ego are one thing. But there is no word to explain this. You see, the world cannot exist without the mind. The mind cannot exist without what we call the ego itself, really. And the ego cannot exist without a body. Question: then, when we leave this body, that is, when the ego leaves it, will it, the ego, immediately grasp another body? Bhagavan: oh yes, it must. It cannot exist without a body. Question: what sort of a body will it grasp then? Bhagavan: either a physical body or a subtle mental body. Question: do you call this present physical body the gross body? Bhagavan: only to distinguish it, to set it apart in conversation, it is really a subtle mental body also. Question: what causes us to be reborn? Bhagavan: desires. Your unfulfilled desires bring you back. And in each case, in each body, as your desires are fulfilled, you create new ones. You must conquer desire to be absorbed into the One and thus end rebirth. Question: can sex change in rebirth? Bhagavan: oh, surely. We have all been both sexes many times. Question: is it possible to sin? Bhagavan: having a body which creates illusion is the only sin, and the body is our only hell. But it is right that we observe moral laws. The discussion of sin is too difficult for a few lines. Question: does one who has realized the self lose the sense of I? Bhagavan: absolutely. Question: then, to you, there is no difference between yourself and myself. That man over there, my servant, are all the same? Bhagavan: all are the same, including those monkeys. Question: but the monkeys are not people. Are they not different? Bhagavan: they are exactly the same as people. All creatures are the same in one consciousness. Question: do we lose our individuality when we merge into the self? Bhagavan: there is no individuality in the self. The self is one, supreme. Question: then individuality and identity are lost? Bhagavan: you don't retain them in deep sleep, do you? Question: but we retain them from one birth to another, don't we? Bhagavan: oh yes, the I thought, the ego, will recur again. Only each time you identify with it, a different body and different surroundings around the body. The effects of past acts, karma, will continue to control the new body just as they did the old one. It is karma that has given you this particular body and placed it in a particular family, race, sex, surroundings, and so forth. Bhagavan added, these questions are good, but tell De Acosta, he always called me De Acosta, she must not become too intellectual about these things. It is better just to meditate and have no thought. Let the mind rest quietly on the self, in the cave of the spiritual heart, Soon, this will become natural, and then there will be no need for questions. Do not imagine that this means being inactive. Silence is the only real activity. Then, Gaya added, Bhagavan says to tell you that he sends you his blessings. This message greatly comforted me. On my way back to Europe, my boat stopped at Port Said. I landed there and motored across the desert to Cairo, where I stayed 3 days and then caught the ship again when it docked at Alexandria. In Cairo, I stayed at the old famous Shepherd Hotel. I spent one day in the museum seeing the Tutankhamun collection, and the second day I rode out by camel to see the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid. When I reached the pyramid, it was nearly sunset. There was no one around except my own dragoman and one or two Arabs sleeping against their kneeling camels. I decided to climb to the top of the pyramid, although it towered above me, tapering off into the sky and looked terribly high. I did not realize how high it was until I started climbing. I started out briskly, but after a certain distance, I grew tired and my pace slackened. The steps of the pyramid are very narrow and eroded, but I was determined to reach the top. Thoroughly exhausted, I finally did. The sun had already gone down. I turned and looked down the steep and awesome slope of the pyramid. Suddenly, I was overcome by the most frightful vertigo. My head swam, and I felt that I was going to plunge to my death. I crouched on the narrow steps and clung to the top of the pyramid so fiercely that my nails broke against the stone and my fingers bled. I could not bring myself to look down again. An agonizing fear took hold of me. I felt cold sweat pouring over my face, neck and back. I became hysterical. What was I to do? I knew if I let go, I would fall. But I also knew I could not hold on much longer. I closed my eyes. I remembered what the Maharishi said, to dive deep into the spiritual heart. I summoned every faculty and all power within me and concentrated on the heart. Suddenly, I saw it like a great light in my mind's eye. In the center, I saw the Maharishi's face smiling at me. Instantly, I felt calm. I turned and looked down. Far below, I saw a man waving at me. I loosened one hand and held it over my head. Then I waved back. The man began calling someone else. Another man ran to him. Swiftly, they began to climb. They climbed expertly and fast, but it seemed hours to me. Probably, it took them about 35 minutes to reach me. One man had a rope. He tied it around my waist and gently stroked my face. He mumbled some words and I could not understand, but I knew they were kind words to encourage me. Between them, each one holding the rope as though we were mountain climbing, we began to descend. Eventually, we reached the bottom safely. Sometime after this, I was told by an enlightened person that climbing the Great Pyramid was considered in ancient Egypt one of the fear tests which students had to pass in order to be initiated into the great religious mysteries. Aspirants were required to climb to the very top of the pyramid, and if on reaching the top of it, he or she could conquer fear, this particular test was won. Bhagavan Ramana Maharishi died on April 14, 1950. He had said, "I am going away. Why could I go? I am here." By the word "here," he did not imply any limitation. He meant rather that the self is. There is no going or coming or changing in that which is changeless and universal. I should not have regarded his death as a blow. How could I lose him? How can one lose anyone? How can one lose that which is eternal? It is only in the first shock and gripped in the illusion of death that one grieves for the physical presence. Yet millions in India mourned the Maharishi. A long article about his death in the New York Times ended with, "Here in India, where thousands of so-called holy men claim close tune with the infinite, it is said that the most remarkable thing about Ramana Maharishi was that he never claimed anything remarkable for himself. It became one of the most loved and respected of all." Concluded, Mercedes de Acosta died in New York City in 1966.